this is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 39, Rise of the Guardians.
The Guardians of Liberty!
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling. I'm here with my co-host, Chelsea Robson.
Hello!
And Mason Smith.
Rotoscoper number 3 reporting for duty, ma'am.
Sir, yes, sir.
I will defend all animation, ma'am.
Awesome!
So, for those of you...
I will deny all direct-to-video to sequels, ma'am.
Thank you, somebody.
So, for those of you who are new to the show, our podcast covers everything in the animation world, news, reviews, and movies. So, each episode, we go over the animation news in the week. We also review a movie from the animation library, past or present, and we have a great, grand old time doing it.
Yay!
Yay, we love it.
Awesome.
Oh, how was your week, everyone?
Great. Very great.
Yeah, mine was good, too. Yeah, just came back from a little mini vacation, saw The Great Gatsby, you know. Pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you think it was heavy with CG effects and like animation and stuff?
Very much, yeah. A lot of things.
The long shots where they would pan in, you know, from one side of the bay to the other, I was like, oh, this is a bit
East Egg to West Egg.
Yeah.
And like they would like fly out over New York City and then dive down a skyscraper onto a car.
Yeah.
Did you like the animation?
I thought some of it served the movie real well because it was nice and realistic.
Uh-huh.
But like this is the same guy that did Australia, which also had a lot of CG effects that weren't necessarily realistic. But the movie Australia and this movie are so over the top that I was okay with it.
Yeah.
Like the yellow car just like happens to be careening at 80 miles per hour down the busy streets of New York.
Yeah.
Like, okay. But yeah, like I thought it was a swell movie and like really cool, and you know, animation wise it was a little over the top, a little unrealistic, but then again that's the director's style, so
yeah, totally.
I had no problem with it. I just made that comment.
Nice. There were some parts I didn't like, those like you were mentioning, those pan scenes when they go from one side of the town to the other. I felt like it was very disorienting. Like, I guess you said unrealistic, but I felt like it was just a bit unfinished. I don't know. And I know this movie got pushed back from Christmas, and I'm wondering if it was because effects weren't done. But overall, I really like the movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot better than the book. The book, like all the characters, none of them have any type of remorse at all for being stupid. But in the movie, like Nick kind of does.
Yeah, they expanded his character a little bit.
Yeah, and so it made it a lot more palatable, I think.
So I also started watching a new animated TV series.
Oh, brother. I hope it's not what I think it is.
What do you think it is?
Is it the freaking My Little Ponies?
Friendship is magic.
It is, but I don't need ponies to teach me that.
Well, like, I kept hearing about it. You know, we've talked about it before. And then, like, during the, you know, past few weeks...
We did have one of our fans actually draw the fan art of us as ponies, which I really appreciated.
That was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
No. Whoever did it, who was it? Do you remember the name?
Maggie, maybe.
Oh, they're, like, they're probably bouncing up and down and raising their hand. Me, it's me. while they're listening. But I just thought they did a great job capturing my my smile. In my hair. Like, I was like, wow, that's exactly what I look like. It was pretty good if I was a pony. But anyway, back to the show. I hate it.
Have you seen it?
I hate it.
Because I kept... Okay, so
I don't need to see it. I've seen all the deviant art ponies.
That's not true.
Do a Google image search on any cartoon character, past or present, and there is a My Little Pony Friendship is Magic version of that.
Is that really so bad?
I don't know what is worse, Sonic characters fan art or My Little Pony fan art.
I think it's fine.
Sorry, Morgan. How's the show? Sorry.
Okay. Let me tell you. So I'm almost done with season one. First, I was like, okay, I got to check this out. I want to see what it's about. You know, there's all these like 20, 30-year-olds who are in it. and it has a huge following like crazy.
Oh, it's insane. I went to the Phoenix Comic Con, and Tara Strong, who's one of
Twilight Sparkle.
Yeah, she's Twilight Sparkle.
Which is an awesome name for a pony, by the way.
Crazy
Twilight
people.
Sparkle.
Like, we sat next to this one guy, and I took my nephew, and he's like 10 or 11, and we sat next to this guy who's had to be like 25 or so, and he's got like his Twilight Sparkle like plush animal, and he's got all these things, and he's like caressing it, and I'm like, oh wow, like, he is, and he's like, I'm the biggest Brony ever, like, Brony? Yes!
That's a term?
No, it is a term. It's a term.
There's
for
a million of them, too.
And it can be bros, obviously, but it's just basically girls and guys who are older who like it.
Yeah.
So you, all of us would be considered bronies.
No, not me. Sorry.
Well, pardon me.
But anyway, Tara Strong is awesome, so I think that's cool. But
so where do you watch it, on Netflix?
Okay, so it's on Netflix, seasons 1 through
Netflix.
3. And I like just started watching. I was like, okay. The first episode is a 2-part episode. And it, like, introduces you to the 6 main characters. It's pretty cool. So Twilight Sparkle, she's, like, a unicorn. Unicorns learn magic. And so she's, like, the apprentice to the princess, who is a Pegasus and a unicorn, which I've learned is called an alicorn. So, but she's, like, a complete egghead bookworm and has no friends. So the princess sends her away to this little ponyville to make friends. And then by the end of, you know, the first few episodes, she makes friends with them, and then it's kind of her life and experiences with her friends each episode. So it's actually really cool, and I like it, and I'm kind of
but
addicted.
it's not all sparkles and unicorns. This new format is kind of edgy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I was reading on Wikipedia and different sites and interviews. The creator, she was working for Hasbro, and she kind of got this job to like reinvigorate the pony franchise with a new, you know, TV series, and she was kind of annoyed with all the girly TV shows at the time, how they kind of are just like overly girly, over the top, and they kind of like sugarcoat everything. It's just like tea parties and butterflies. And so Jared watched it with me, and he's like, those ponies are actually like kind of mean. And the one episode he watched, it was like these two ponies were like really competitive, and they were racing, and they were kind of using dirty tricks to like disqualify the other one. And so they kind of like explore, you don't have to be perfect friends, or like, I don't know, I guess a little bit more deeper issues than you would in a normal Strawberry Shortcake type movie.
Right.
So I don't know, actually pretty good. I would say, like, honestly, just check out the first 2 episodes and then say yay or nay.
Okay, that seems fair. The mystery to me is how there's such a big adult audience following for this fan base for this show.
And one of the things is, when they made it, they wanted to make it a show that like the parents could watch with their kids. Like, it's not like they've changed their advertising because they have this huge audience. Like, they still make the show for the kids, but they realize they have this older audience. So they'll put in like Star Trek references or Star Wars or all these kind of like nerdy references that the kids wouldn't get. But they wanted a show where the adults would be able to like enjoy at the same time. And I think adults sort of enjoyed it too much.
So kind of like Rugrats pre-movie.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
There you go. There's my report. So if you, let's say, to our listeners, if you are a brony or you want to give us a little mini review, send us a voicemail at therotoscopers.com/voicemail and let us know your thoughts. Are you on Mason's side, or are you on my side, or are you on the complete other side where you are all in, you have your plushie, and you are total brony down?
Yeah, and anti-bronies and My Little Pony skeptics, make your voices heard. It's got to be a little balanced here.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, let's go to the news.
Yeah, so we got some commentary to make on some of these crazy news stories. Can you believe Disney Pixar's schedule that they got postulated? From 2016 to 2018... they're going to release 8 films between Disney and Pixar.
It's pretty awesome.
So that's about four each in the course of 2 years.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be Disney, like Toon Disney, Disney?
Yeah, like full length?
No, these are
features?
All full length.
Really? Full length theatrical
Walt
features.
Disney Animation Studios.
Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How's DreamWorks doing? Are they doing about the same amount of
movies?
They
were on track
movies?
To do 3 a year, and now they're just 2. So, I mean, maybe by 2018 they'll be back up to 3, but for the next, like, short 5-year period, 3 to 5, I think they're at 2.
In the meantime, they're making cartoon series on all their movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's where all their money's going into.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just so funny because it's like Untitled Disney Animation, April 4th, 2016. Untitled Disney Animation.
We've got Inside Out.
Well, these are before. None of these have titles.
Yeah.
These are all untitled. We'd have no idea what they are. Inside Out's like 2015.
Oh, really? This is all after that?
Yeah.
What about Finding Dory?
No, these are all untitled. Like, we have no idea what they're about or names, titles, anything.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Do you think this will affect the quality of the films?
No. I think they are getting their act together. Like, did Disney, even during its prime, did they ever have two movies come out in the same year?
Did they even double up, bro?
No.
I don't think so. No, it was like
every 4 years.
It was every 4 years, and then they slowly got it to one a year. And then, you know, Home on the Range happened. But Disney is skipping 2017 entirely, and that's just going to be for Pixar. So
oh,
they're
cool.
doing two in 2016 and two in 2018. So it's
year of the Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you know? Well, I think, you know, from all my conversations I've been having with my contact at Pixar, they have the technology now to make the films look better using less time and less computer memory.
Nice.
And so that it's an exciting time when the technology is advanced enough to, yeah, they can do this. They can accomplish this. And why not? You know, there's money to be made if they can put out the products. And I think that's cool. Like, they must be really digging in and having confidence in their teams because Pixar's not hiring right now is the buzz from the industry that I've been hearing. And so it's kind of this mysterious thing, and I'm sure they're going to accomplish a lot, and I'm sure they're going to reach their goals or whatever. I can't play the cynic here because they've got such incredible technology out now that they can do this.
Mm-hmm. It's like 5 years down the line, too.
So the Disney movies, people are thinking, these are ones we've heard of, but we don't have any dates. Ron and John, they have a new film, which supposedly is like in the South Pacific, and it involves like a haunted tiki, not necessarily haunted, but some sort of like tiki man or something.
Mahana, you ugly.
Exactly. And then there's also another one by Brian Howard, and it's going to have Jason Bateman. It's going to be like an animal comedy. That's one that like Disney has announced, but we don't know when.
An animal comedy.
Oh, we love animal comedies.
When does Disney do animal comedy?
Since Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, bother.
Then, of course, Wreck-It Ralph 2, and then supposedly...
I'm gonna wreck it again!
There was another movie called King of the Elves that was, you know, in production for a long time. We haven't heard anything, so that maybe could be on the list.
King of the Elves? That's the third Hobbit movie they're coming out.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, exciting news. I mean, at least we know Disney's back. Pixar's good as ever. Let's just hope that... I mean, 2016, 2018, I don't even want to think that far ahead.
No, neither do I.
I'm like, oh, no. It'll be really
cool.
Neither.
I will have supposed to be... Have gotten my life together by then. Anyway. Okay,
right.
You think that's cool news? Check this out. Do you guys like the Flintstones?
Who doesn't? Yeah.
Hey, Fred. check this out. You've heard the news. The WWE, that's wrestling, folks, is producing the new animated Flintstone. Fred Flintstone, unfortunately, will not be voiced by Macho Man Randy Savage because he's dead. But how do you do that? And this isn't the first time they've done it.
Yeah. So apparently they Scooby-Doo, there's a straight-to-video DVD Blu-ray, but it's not out yet. It comes out next March.
Like Scoob, it's gonna choke slam us right out of the ring.
I don't know. It just seems weird. It's like, oh, let's bring in our wrestlers and have them.
Velma falls in love with John Cena, and who wouldn't, ladies? I mean, come on.
I don't even know who these people are.
John Cena, come on.
I'm not a wrestler follower type person.
You're not.
I'm not.
You don't know what you're missing.
Now let's see who this monster really is. Rey Mysterio. I would have gotten away with it too.
So basically, based on Mason's reaction to this, that shows how everyone else in the community is reacting. It's
exactly.
Like a big joke.
half the comments on our site are like, are they kidding? This is funny.
April Fools.
okay, so what's the wrestling connection? Are they just producing it, or is it going to be like cameos?
No. There will be wrestling stars in the film. It's just an excuse to plug their own characters within the Flintstones world, I guess. Random.
I had no idea that wrestling was so family oriented.
Hey, you know, it's all acting anyway, so ooh, I'm going to get lots of.
It's true. Help. You know, you know, I had a buddy who just got back from being a missionary in Malaysia, and apparently all the kids there still believe that professional wrestling in the U.S. is real.
Nice.
And so whenever a kid would, like, give him mess or something or, like, be a punk to him, you would just be like, you just look at him and be like, I'm going to ruin your life right now. Let me tell you about wrestling. I was like, that's really cruel. But anyway, I can only speculate as to the amazing plot that's going to be in this new Flintstones movie.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And?
I can't say anything right now. I'm speechless.
Okay, well, we'll wait until more surfaces, until you can reveal your thoughts. So, that's the news. Very polarizing. But that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so next, Chelsea and I interviewed some of our writers on the site so you guys can get to know them better. They write a lot of the articles on the site, and they're really instrumental in helping keeping us up to date on the news. And so,
yeah, our writers are awesome.
They are. And so our first one is with Blake Taylor, and he's kind of our one of our resident Disney writers. He does a lot of really cool things that kind of tie into the parks a little bit and how they tie back into the movies. And then he does a lot of the general Disney news, which is really awesome. So this is our first interview that we're going to do with him, and we're going to keep having these in the next upcoming episodes. So when you see them comment in the comments or the different news stories that they write, you kind of have a better idea who they are.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
Today we get to interview some of our writers, and we are so excited to be able to do so. Today we're going to be talking to Blake Taylor, and you can find him on the website. He does a lot of different reviews for the website, and it's just so much fun. So let's meet Blake.
So Blake, tell us about yourself, you know, your very typical job interview question.
Well, I am really into animation, obviously, and particularly Disney and Pixar. Everybody grows up with Disney films, but I feel like I just sort of never grew out of them. And sort of visiting the parks definitely fueled my sort of passion for what Disney does. And especially as I grew older, seeing that it doesn't just happen, that people work really hard to make it happen. I guess that was about around age 10 or 11 that I just sort of started to pay more attention to that sort of thing. And it just made me appreciate it all the more, even more than I did before. And I actually had the privilege of going to the Cars world premiere when I was in sixth grade. It was sort of near, it was at a Speedway nearby, and tickets were like $10. It was the best value I've ever paid for anything in my life. And it was after that that I came back from that experience, and it was like I don't just want to let that be just a memory. And sort of that's sort of where my passion for writing started going. And so it was sort of like Disney plus writing equals sort of what I want to do now.
Awesome. So you have your own website, right?
Yes, lakeonline.com.
Lakeonline.com. And how long have you had it? It's been up and running a long time, right?
Yeah, it'll be 10 years this in a few weeks, 10 years.
Wow, crazy.
Started off as just like sort of family website with like pictures and stuff like that. And then it's sort of as my interest in the entertainment industry grew, it sort of developed into more, what I hope is sort of more a professional feel. So
cool. So what do you do on your website for those who don't know?
Basically, I just sort of write about mostly the entertainment industry, but with a slant on Disney and Disney theme parks. And what I try to do is I feel like a lot of websites just regurgitate the same news. I try to sort of bring a perspective that reads between the lines as to what the news could mean in the future or what it means in terms of the studio's legacy and things like that.
So what are some of the other things that you kind of bring into all of your writings? So, for example, you have different interests. Like, what are those things that you end up writing about as well?
I mostly write just about entertainment and stuff like that.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a Disney fan are you?
I wouldn't say a 10 because I definitely don't know anything and everything that could possibly ever be known. Probably about an 8, I would say.
Yeah. What about scale of 1 to 10, Pixar fan?
Probably around the same. I love Pixar. Every movie is an event, and it's not just a movie. It's something that really touches you, and you see reflections of yourself in their movies, which I think is getting harder to do as movie studios become more competitive, but I think they've got a handle on it.
Yeah, definitely. So what are your goals for the future? I mean, so you're in college right now. What year are you in school?
I'm currently a freshman right now. I'm majoring in English and minoring in media studies. And I would actually love to participate in the Disney College program at one point. That's basically you just go down there, live, and work as a cast member for a semester, and you get internship credit. So that would be awesome to do that. And they say that's sort of the best way to get your foot in the door to sort of if you want to do bigger things for the company. So I would really love to do that. And if not, hopefully writing for y'all or writing other places could sort of get me somewhere.
Yeah. Awesome.
You're a great marksman, Derek. One of the best. It takes more than good aim. It takes courage. That's my forte.
Well then, how about a quick round of catch and fire?
Catch and fire? You mean me?
You're the only one with enough courage.
So now we're going to do our catch and fire segment, which we like to do. It's just rapid fire questions. So, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So, you've probably heard these before, so you're kind of prepared, but we'll just go. So, first animated movie you remember seeing?
Toy Story.
Favorite cartoon growing up?
Lion King.
Favorite animated movie?
Lion King.
Favorite animator or artist?
Ooh. Oh, gosh. Probably Wayne Allwine, the voice of Mickey Mouse up until recently.
Classic animation or CGI?
Classic.
Favorite animation studio?
Disney.
Yeah, no brainer. Disney or Pixar?
That's a tough one. If we're going just for the movie quality themselves, probably Pixar. If we're going with memories tied to the movies, probably Disney.
Disneyland or Disney World?
Disney World.
Have you been to Disneyland?
I went once last summer. It was a great experience, but I feel like just Disney World's my home park.
Yeah,
but I feel
totally.
Like anybody can say that about whichever one they're most familiar with. But.
Cool. Stitch or Tinkerbell?
Stitch. I have a Stitch lamp in my room.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Hardcore. People or anthropomorphic?
Anthropomorphic.
Songs or no songs?
Songs.
Snow White or Sleeping Beauty?
Snow White.
Tiana or Mulan?
In a fight?
No. Sure. Sure, why not?
Mulan. My brother's lacrosse team actually uses I'll Make a Man Out of You as their pump-up song
That's
before
awesome.
Games.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
Summer releases or winter releases?
Ooh. Summer.
Favorite land in Disney World? Magic Kingdom.
I gotta go with Fantasyland. Or Main Street. Probably Main Street.
Rasputin or Dr. Facilier?
Dr. Facilier.
And here is the very last big awesome one. Okay. Return of Jafar or Cinderella 2?
I actually have never seen Return of Jafar, and Cinderella 2 kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. So.
But you have to pick one.
I guess Return of Jafar.
Nice choice. Cool. 52 out of 52.
Well done.
Well, are there any last thoughts or things you want to say?
Just that I hope everybody's enjoying what our sort of new-ish team of bloggers is putting out there, that it brings you sort of just a fresh perspective on everything that's going on.
I think so.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
Well, my personal blog, like I said, is www.blakeonline.com, and then obviously on the Rotoscopers. And then I also write a column for wdwradio.com. Some of y'all may have heard of it. It's a travel podcast hosted by Lou Mangiello, but I write for their blog a column about finding instances of Disney magic in everyday life. Like, the post this week was about different smells that you may come across and remind you, oh, that sort of smells like whatever from that I know from Disney.
Awesome.
And, yeah.
You wrote a cool one about how to make your dorm room Disney, but not like too Disney that it scares your roommates, yeah. Right? That was so awesome because it was so true. Like, yes, I'm a Disney nerd, but I don't want to scare potential friends.
Line.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So awesome. So Blake is one of our writers. We love having him. He does a really, really good job writing and keeping up on the Disney news stories and also the parks, which is fun and awesome. So thanks, Blake.
Yeah, thank y'all.
No problem. We'll have to have you on an episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's a list of movies, maybe?
I don't know if this would count because it's sort of only animation, but I really admire Mary Poppins.
Ooh, we could do that one.
Okay.
Just because it was like, it was the last film. It wasn't the last film, but it was the last big project that Walt worked on. And I think it sort of like culminates together everything that he did best in his career. Like, that movie is Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Mary Poppins it is. Okay. So we'll do that this summer. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. See ya.
I've been around for a long time. My name is Jack Frost. I love being on my own.
Snow day!
No rules, no responsibility.
Yeah!
It's as good as it sounds.
Hello, mate.
Been a long time. Blizzard of 68, I believe.
Easter Sunday, wasn't it?
You're not still mad about that, are you?
Yes, but this is about something else.
Fellas.
Hey!
There he is. Jack Frost.
Santa. Wow.
I hope the Yetis treated you well.
Yeah, I love being shoved in a sack and tossed through a magic portal.
Oh, good. That was my idea.
The Big Four, all together. Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy, Sandman, and the Easter Kangaroo.
The what? I'm a bunny.
It is our job to protect the children of the world. Now we face a threat greater than ever before.
What an adorable dream.
What's more powerful? It's fear. We need your help.
Why me?
You have something very special inside. And we can't do it without you.
Let's go! Sandy? Sandy? Wake up!
You can't kill fear, Jack. I'm not afraid of you.
We stand together.
You take the ones on the left, I'll take the ones on the right.
Wings up and take no prisoners!
Come on! Here we go!
Am I on the naughty list?
Naughty list? Whoa. You hold the record.
Previously on Lost. Okay. Yeah, here by popular demand, folks, today we're going to be reviewing DreamWorks' November 2012 masterpiece Rise of the Guardians. And I can hear the old ancestor from Mulan now going, Guardians.
But yeah. not the owls.
Not the Gahoos.
Not Gahooly.
Gahoo!
Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Gahool.
So one of the people who were really wanting us to do this movie was actually my sister Marissa.
Okay.
Yeah, so she comes up to me and she's like, "Here, Chelsea, you should do this one on your podcast." Oh, awesome, miss. And then like she pulls that one up, Rise of the Guardians, and then right up she's like, "I also have this one." And she pulls up the Owls of Gahool.
Like, oh, sweet.
You do have them all, don't you?
Guardians on the brain.
Nice.
They're all right in the same vein. All right.
So yeah, Rise of the Guardians released last year, November 21st, and we'll talk about the timing of that release date. Yeah, based on the book series, The Guardians of Childhood. Now, I think Guardians of Childhood is like a really good title for this film. I can see how it doesn't roll off the tongue as well as Rise of the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they kind of are the Guardians of Childhood, like all these cool characters, you know?
Yeah. And like, I understand how they're rising, but I mean, they kind of already rose. It's like the rise of one guardian. Basically.
Yeah, the rise of one guardian. That should be the new title. You know, in other countries, it's like, I think it's the Legend of the Guardians, the Five Legendaries.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the Legendary Five.
Articuno, Zapdos, and Moltres?
No, that's the Legendary
birds?
Three Birds,
Ho-Ho.
Okay? Yeah, and then Lugia and Ho-Oh.
The Five Guardians.
Although, technically, Lugia isn't a bird Pokemon. It's more of a flying Pokemon. Mm. It's clearly not a bird.
Well, Gyarados is also a flying Pokemon, and it clearly doesn't have wings.
You take that back. All right, we really need to do a Pokemon episode.
We are. No. Just tell me when you can do it, and then me, you, and Gary will do it.
Yeah, I'm really out of this loop.
Yeah, Chelsea's not even offended. I didn't even mention her.
Not at all. I'm actually glad.
I know, because like it's going to be nuts.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Anyway.
Okay, cool.
Besides the book series, there's a short film, Man in the Moon by RealFX, which if you YouTube Man in the Moon, you get this weird like 1960s claymation.
Yeah, that's not it.
Yeah, that's not it. I watched it and I was extremely depressed afterwards and I was like, this can't be what they based
it off.
No,
if you go to like the official website of the Guardians of the Childhood book series, there's a page where like you can watch the video, but it never loads. Like maybe I needed to open it up in a new browser or something, but like I think it was there, but I tried watching it, but I couldn't. I was kind of disappointed. So this is sort of interesting because these books, right now there's four of them, four novels and two picture books. And the first one, which is called Nicholas St. North and the Battle of the Nightmare King, it wasn't even published until 2011. And this movie came out in 2012.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So apparently back in 2008, even before the books were written, the writer, William Joyce, he already kind of like gave this to DreamWorks to do and kind of gave them permission to do that. He was going to be a co-director, but his daughter died of cancer.
That's
and
right.
So he left. But this is also the same guy who did the book that Epic is based on.
So, really?
Mm-hmm.
And then Blue Sky got into that. Huh,
yeah. So this
kind of peddling his wares off to everyone. Very good.
Well, I think now, hold on.
Hey, he's not a respecter of companies here.
Hey, you know. But you know what's weird is his first novel came out in 2011. This film came out in 2012?
Yeah, in 2008. Even before he like finished reading it, he was sort of just had the concept. He sold the rights to DreamWorks. And that's sort of the way like a lot of movies are these days. Like, movie studios hear about an idea of a book being made, and even before it's published, they'll buy the rights to it.
Remember that stint, like in kind of the mid-2000s, when all the children's fantasy novels started turning into movies real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Like Spiderwick Chronicles, Bridge to Terabithia, a.k.a. The Kid Dies in the End. The Harry Potter, of course. I think Harry Potter started it.
Totally.
Narnia, you know.
What's that guy? Jim Carrey was in it. The Lemony
Snicket. Lemony Snicket. And then there's a series of unfortunate events, which might be the same thing.
Yeah.
Inkheart, which was a horrible fiasco. Yeah. So I those weren't necessarily like recent, but this is like almost an extreme. So you're saying he sold the concept to DreamWorks before he even finished the book?
Yeah. Basically.
Oh my goodness.
And you know what I think is interesting? Like, you think, okay, if you're not too familiar with him, you think, oh, he's a children's writer. But when you go on his Wikipedia, he's been involved in animation since the beginning. Like, Toy Story, he was a conceptual and art design in that department. He was on Buddy, which is
what's that?
Funny. Buddy. Isn't that Air Bud? I don't know. I don't know what Buddy is. Then he was on A Bug's Life, Robots, Meet the Robinsons.
Oh,
then
sweet.
He directed the Fantastic Flying Books of Morris Lessmore,
which
won the Oscar. And then went on and did Rise of the Guardians and Epic. So this guy's kind of had a really cool career. That he's obviously like an artist, been in the animation industry a long time, done lots of things with lots of different studios, writes like a very successful, you know, book series, a few of them actually, and then those get made into, we want to say blockbuster films, but we'll get there.
Yeah, is this how you make it with a fine arts degree? I don't know. Wow. Good for him. Now, the director helm passed off to a guy named Peter Ramsey. First time director on a full-length feature film. Also happens to be the first African-American to direct a full-length feature film. But, you know, whatever. And first director's credit went to a short that they did for Monsters vs. Aliens. You know, that film.
Nice.
And he did a lot of storyboarding for action and sci-fi films in the 90s, like Independence Day, Godzilla, the horrible one from 1998, by the way. Hey, it wasn't his fault. It was Emmerich's fault for screwing up the creature design. Anyway, that's another episode, right? you can check out a bunch of interviews on Ramsey, you know, what he thought about the film. And there's interesting. I took a lot of my research for this episode from his reaction to the months after the Rise of the Guardians release. This was November. And he's talking about in this interview how, you know, it was great working on it. He talked about how different it was working with animation. But, you know, every Wikipedia article on Rise of the Guardians will say that this film was, quote, disappointing financially, not disappointing, you know, in terms of creativity or style or just, you know, the quality of the movie, but financially just didn't do very well. Check this out, folks. Lowest earning film debut for DreamWorks since Flushed Away.
Ooh.
Ouch. First time DreamWorks has lost money on a film since Sinbad. Also, ouch.
That is.
And this, you know, you could debate this, but this is a contributing factor to the 300 and plus layoffs at DreamWorks last year. Medic. But it's not like everyone hated it.
No, I really thought this was one of the better films of last year.
And if you look on all the rating sites, you know, there's mixed to positive, they say, but there's a lot of positive reviews and ratings on the web.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? So this was a November 2012 release. Ramsey himself mentioned that they had to compete with some big movies that came out last year, because a lot of big movies came out last year. 007, Skyfall, the Lincoln movie, the one without the vampires, by the way. And of course, it had to compete with you know, Twilight, Soggy, Breaking Wind Part 2. And so it was ranked fourth in the box office behind those aforementioned movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It the timing that killed it?
I think that was probably a big part of it. I mean, even when we were talking about it at the time, we have another episode where we talked to Frankie Franco III.
Yeah.
He works at DreamWorks and was on this film, and he was like, yeah, we're really kind of hoping that because of Breaking Dawn, that it won't really affect it, because kind of the same fans that would go to Rise of the Guardians were going to be going over and over and over and over again to Breaking Dawn. So,
yeah,
I think that definitely did take a chunk out of it.
Chunk.
I mean, not even just Breaking Dawn, but just like all of those movies around it. It was a blockbuster film ending year, you know?
Yeah. And after doing a little digging, aka skimming Wikipedia, I found out that the film made over its budget, grossed in total about $303 million. But they actually lost about $80 million because of marketing and promotional costs. And I remember a few commercials and a few displays like in the theaters. But do you guys remember a lot of marketing for this film? Or was it too much or too little that made the difference?
Okay, so I specifically remember the very first teaser poster for this.
Yeah, and didn't we review it a little bit on one of our first episodes?
Yeah, and
we bombed it.
It was Santa Claus folding his arms, and you see naughty and nice. And that's all you see. You don't see his face, and then you just see Rise of the Guardians. So, like, immediately to me, even though I kind of had an idea of what this was going to be out, like, to me it's like Christmas. This is something to do with Christmas, but it's a different Santa than we're used to. It's like a hardcore biker Santa.
Hardcore.
And it's funny because, you know, you think, yes, there is Santa, elves, and the sleigh in there, but it's not about him at all. Like, he's in there, but he's really just a side character. And it's about, you know, Jack Frost. And to me, I think it would have been a lot better if they would have, like, spun the Jack Frost angle and, like, his origins and maybe focusing on him rather than all the Guardians. But then again, the movie was called about all the Guardians, and they all contribute in a way, but I mean, people love Jack. Hello, cosplay.
Yeah.
Well, and it's easy to cosplay as Jack.
Yeah.
Some cosplayers would beg to differ. No, it's not easy. But yeah, everybody's
jeans.
Got a big, khaki washed skinny jeans, you know, you can pick them up at J. Crew. And the hoodie, you know.
And just frosted hair. So frosted I asked hair. Our Twitter listeners what they thought about this.
Yeah.
And you want me to read their responses?
Let's hear it.
So I basically, that's not the right line.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Okay, so this is basically, I asked, okay, why do you think it did so poorly in the box office? And someone says, okay, Brianna says, it was an amazing movie in my opinion, love it, but maybe the advertising is what did it in, too annoying and goofy looking, ? Kyle, one of our writers, says, hard to sell the concept and poor marketing made it look too silly for adults. My theories are in an article that I'll send you. Okay. One person, Courtney, says, because of how the Guardians were designed, unfortunately. Terrible reason, but it's accurate. That's an interesting thing. Jordan says, I'm guessing that the concept really didn't appeal to general audiences. One other. Paige Warren says, the title was vague/confusing with other movies. People kept thinking I was telling them to go see that 2010 Owl movie. Ben says, not enough advertising, and people were still going to see Wreck-It Ralph, which is true. Wreck-It Ralph, okay, that's one thing I wanted to comment on. Wreck-It Ralph was number one for a few weeks in a row, and it had a lot of, like, social proof, because you go and you see, okay, what was number one in the box office? Oh, Wreck-It Ralph must be really good. But even from the beginning...
You know what, I think Wreck-It Ralph is still in theaters down here.
But even from the beginning, because of all these other live-action movies that came out during the same time, Rise of the Guardians was fourth at best. You know, and people see that, they're like, fourth, must not be that good. So I think that maybe, you know, people look at that and they kind of, you know, base their opinion somewhat on what's the top movie.
Also, you get the media snowball effect, too. Like, some media people start posting bad reviews, all of a sudden, all the rest of the media wants to know why the movie is so bad, and then they go off of that, you know?
Yeah.
Ramsey, he mentioned a little bit of that in his interview, so, you know, take it or leave it, whatever.
Cool. So yeah, there's a bunch of others, and they all basically say marketing, marketing, marketing. Marketing was too edgy, which I completely agree. It was poor direction, I guess, where they went.
Yeah, because it's like a whole naughty and nice thing. The tattoos, it's super edgy, kind of, you know. It makes you wonder if this is like, okay, Santa is like a cage fighter now. You know? It's kind of giving off the... But which he's not in the film. They make the point that though Santa looks rough and tough, on the outside, the more you get to know them in the film, they're all their classic selves. They just have kind of this new persona that the director invented, the writers and stuff wanted.
You know, going back to our, you know, when we first got those posters, my whole feeling was just like, I don't know if I wanted to see this one just because it's like, oh, it was too edgy for me. And in my sense, like, I think a lot of people kind of felt the same way. They're just like, you want something safe kind of in this time. Like, you, if you're going to take your kids to it, if this is something you don't really want to, it just seems too different, too out of the norm, you know, and, oh, but Wreck-It Ralph is going on still. Let's go see that, you know? So I think that that could have been a big problem.
You know what I thought, though? My general impression was that I liked it.
Oh, I loved the movie. After I went in and saw it, I was like, yeah, this is probably one of the best films of the year. I mean, I really, really liked it. But like I said, it was just getting into it. Like, you had to actually get into the theater first.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Now, this was the first time I'd seen it. I saw it this week. And wow, they took this concept, this what if concept. The whole thing started when Joyce heard his son ask him, do you think that Santa Claus knows the Easter Bunny? Do they network? Mm-hmm. Are they connected? Are they in the same universe? Do they interact? So that the whole thing started with that concept. And with this movie, they made something really original. Now, there's a lot of things to explain because there's this world and there's this lore and canon, you know, of everything of the Guardians. You know, there's the rules, the oaths, you know. But the cool thing is that they have an explanation for everything. First example I saw was, who makes the toys at Santa's workshop? How does that work? Well, Santa has this cool creative mind and he forms them out of ice and then passes them off to the workshops. And the Yetis, not the elves. I love the comment about the elves. Yeah, I love the comments about the elves.
We just make them think that they do.
They just think that they do.
Ooh, it's pretty. Good job.
Yeah, awesome. And so I like how there's kind of a science and a method behind these characters. Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I agree with Chelsea. It's like, even just like renting this movie to watch it again, it was like, but then when I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, this was good. I really like this movie. It was sort of an odd premise because, I mean, the real driving force is Jack. Like, this movie's basically about Jack Frost. You know, it's showing him joining the Guardians. You know, then a bunch of teeth get stolen. And then Jack realizes, oh my gosh, my memories were in those teeth. And so it's kind of like an origin story. And then they all go to find the teeth. And, you know, and then there's this choice that Jack makes, whether he's going to help himself or, you know, do it for the greater good of the children. And it's interesting. But it's not what I'm sorry, from the advertising, didn't get any of that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of plot lines that are going through. You know, you have the conflict of good versus evil. You have the conflict of Jack versus his former self and who he is and what he's supposed to be. And then you have the mess with the kids and do they believe, you know, poor kids, whatever. And so, yeah, it's fairly complex. And, boy, it's a lot to explain and explore and go through in the movie. One thing I loved about this film was the design of it all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the creative teams behind this, well, I'm sure the novels helped, but they really were inventive and they really thought through a bunch of stuff about how this works, the science of each of these Guardians' world. The animation was pretty cool. I mean, it didn't like blow me away. Very effects heavy. You know, there's a lot of volumetric particles flying around. That would be the sand from Sandman and the ashes from Pitch.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is cool.
Impressive.
Well, DreamWorks actually wrote some software specifically to accomplish that.
Cool.
So it's cool. And the animation was cool. I think it was a little mocap heavy sometimes, but everything was clearly red and stuff. Like Santa's like little like facial expressions and like how he rolls his eyes and how he smiles and stuff. A lot of good humor in there. Now the characters. These aren't your jolly fluffy Coca-Cola mascots, people.
You mean polar bears and Santa Claus?
Yeah, polar bears and Santa Claus and they're tough. You know, they're warriors. True. They're they're warrior guardians.
I'd say the Sandman's a little soft.
Well, no, Sandman's but
he's cool.
No, he's one that he
whoops up on Pitch, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's like pulls out his whips and I'm like, I love the comments like, remind me not to tick you off.
I know. I think the Sandman was such a cool character because he didn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was mute and he was quiet and he was kind of missing for the whole part of the movie, and so you kind of forget about him, and I don't think people maybe resonate with him as much, but it's because we just don't see as much as him. But he's a very simple character, and I like that. Like, he seems really like a gentleman.
Yeah
definitely. Now Peter Ramsey, he made a statement. He's like, the point of all these new character designs was to sort of wake people up and say, this is for now. Like, these are the characters now in today's world. So the look is radical. And he says, when you watch the movie, you see that by the end, every single character has fulfilled everything you'd ever known about these characters when you were a kid. And so he says they were really conscious not to betray the original meaning of the characters, but this is like a new look. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like a new vision of them, you know, for today's world. Now, I think in a lot of ways it worked, and they really had some interesting stuff to show.
Yeah.
Number one was Santa, played by Alec Baldwin, of course. I thought he did a really good job, and he didn't show a lot of Alec Baldwin, partly because of the Cossack accent. And as Shanna said, it's Santa Claus with swords. But a lot of stylization here, you know? Perhaps too much on Santa, I think. I think there was an issue with his hair. It was, like, way too solid.
I thought that was a problem throughout. Just the hair, I didn't think they had kind of mastered that. Because the little sister, her hair, it's like when you have greasy hair and it sort of just, like, clumps together. Her hair was just sort of this, like, clumpy dangle. It just was
goopy
very
kind of thing.
Yeah, it was very hard. I didn't feel like it flowed. Like, all the characters' hair, I definitely had a problem with.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Santa
included. I liked his character.
Yeah, he was really cool. He was, I mean, it's
everybody
funny.
Everybody loves the sleigh.
His voice kind of reminded me of Zangief from Street Fighter.
That's just because you think everyone like with a Russian accent is
Zangief. No, I don't. I do not.
I was kidding. Yeah, he was cool. I loved his little references were so funny. He's like, Rimsky-Korsakov, you know, as a violinist and classical music lover. I love these references because, like, you know, these little expressions that he said instead of saying, oh my gosh, or whatever, they were names.
Oh, so he's not cursing in Russian. Then.
No, they're just names of famous Russian musical composers.
Oh, that's funny.
It's really awesome.
That's pretty funny. Oh, that's pretty good. So yeah, Santa. Now we got the Easter Bunny. Voiced by Hugh Jackman, of course, Australian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole Hugh Jackman-ness, it didn't really show, so that's cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, this is Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, but did they pay an arm and a leg for Hugh Jackman and they didn't get Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, most likely, mate.
No, it was really cool. I liked it. And did you know the Easter Bunny's full name is E. Astor Bunnymund?
Bunnymund. Oh,
interesting.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, E. Astor, Easter, Bunny.
Oh, really? Huh, I get it now.
Uh-huh.
oh, that's funny. I loved Easter Bunny because, like, in the very first scene, right when he goes into the North Pole, he's like, oh, it's freezing. And I'm like, I like you already.
I know. He pops out of his hole. He's all, like, manly and built. And he's like, oh, it's freezing.
Nice.
And then, like, when they go back and forth, like, him and Santa.
I really love his little relationship with Santa.
It's so funny. It was like, Santa's like, no matter how many eggs you paint, they're still just eggs. Like, I'm dealing with perishables here. So you get all year to prepare. Oh, man.
I know. Easter Bunny's kind of the cool but rude. He's kind of the Raphael of the group.
Yeah.
You know?
He's the one that, like, okay, we don't recognize it because we're American, but he's the one that cusses throughout the entire thing.
He's, like, saying bloody.
Yeah, he says bloody through the entire thing. It's like, oh, yeah, that's very offensive when you go to some places.
Whatever. We love Ron Weasley, and he says bloody heck every 5 seconds in Harry Potter. Whatever. We Americans don't care. We love it.
We don't know what it means, though. It actually means the blood of Christ, and so by saying it's just like it's very offensive.
Yeah, it's a cursing. But I thought his character was cool. You know, it's kind of at odds with everyone, especially Jack. You know,
yeah, I love it. It's like winter of 68. Remember?
Oh yeah.
I believe it was there was a blizzard. Yeah,
Easter Sunday.
Easter 68. Sunday, if I remember. I loved it.
No, when,
well, you know, the Easter Bunny, he has to compete with how big Christmas is.
Yeah.
You know, Santa in this movie, he knows that he's the big show, you know, and he's pretty proud of it. And it's not like the Easter Bunny is jealous. He's just like, hey, come on, like, my job is really hard and I don't nearly get as enough notoriety as you do, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, there would be no Christmas if it weren't for Easter.
I thought it was interesting when the kids stopped believing in him because Easter didn't really work out. There were no eggs. They're like, oh, I guess the Easter Bunny doesn't exist. And then they start walking through him. And, like, finally, he understands what it's like not to be believed in. You know, he understands Jack's pain. But then at some point, I think the Easter Bunny had to have felt this before when he first started out and, you know, did his gig. But
yeah,
it's just sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next Guardian. Tooth Fairy. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Isla Fisher, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whatever. She voiced Beans and Rango. Are you cuddling me?
Oh, that's the best name.
Beans.
Beans is great. Dude, I love Rango. We need to do like a Rango revisited
episode. You know what's so
episode.
Sad? Rango is our second least listened to episode.
What?
Yeah, people don't like it.
Rango! Whoosh. I love Rango.
So, full name of Tooth Fairy is Toothiana.
Okay.
Huh, interesting.
Fun fact.
She's really cute.
She's really hyper.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's really hyper. I mean, she's a businesswoman. She's got, like, an industry to run.
It's true.
You know, but she's kind of weird at the same time. Like, why does she have to keep the teeth? Me and Shannon were wondering. And then they have an explanation for it with the memories and stuff. But, like, yeah. She's very, like, she's almost like a, you know, she talks about being out in the field and stuff. So it's like she's kind of a, she's like a biologist or, like, a whatever, you know, collecting samples, you know?
Yeah.
And she, like, loves that they have residue from the kid's mouth attached to the teeth. She's oh, maybe she's a fairy liker. You know, maybe she likes fairies. Oh, look at your old teeth. They've got, like, blood and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I think she's cute, though. She's a cool character.
Yeah, she's really fun.
Well, I mean, think about it. She's got to be business-like because every kid's got a whole mouthful of teeth that they're going to end up losing. They got to get rid of them. Got to find them.
Oh, she's like, wow, you guys collect teeth and leave gifts as fast as my fairies. You guys did leave gifts, right? And then it flashes to all of them getting coins at the laundromat. I thought that was a great gag. And this movie was funny.
I loved it.
It's not, yeah. So
dude, that segment was hilarious when they were collecting the teeth. Because they all get really competitive, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of crosses the line into slapstick with, you know, whatever, DreamWorks, of course. But I thought it was really entertaining.
Yeah, I agree.
I like how they each have these kind of crazy magical powers where the Easter Bunny has like these portals that are rabbit holes, you know, and he can just kind of do it wherever. And then Santa can warp through chimneys, and he can also create these other, he has his snow globe that can transport him anywhere. I don't know. The technology is insane. Sandman, very cute guy.
Yeah, we kind of talked about him. Awesome.
They call him Sandy, though.
Yeah, and that kind of bugged me because when I think of Sandy, I think of Sandy Claus. When I think of Santa Claus, I think of Nightmare Before Christmas, and I think of Santa. So I kept wondering, I was saying Sandy, I kept thinking Santa, and I'm like, wait, that's Santa. Like, anyways, my problem, not yours.
Do you know who also had a name in here that you didn't really notice it until later?
Huh.
The Man in the Moon, they call him Manny.
Manny, oh, that's nice. Right.
I was like,
although we don't ever see him. I think in the books he has like a role.
Does
you don't have to see him to believe he exists.
That's true, but
it's about faith, folks.
So what about that Jack Frost? Mm-hmm.
Captain. Chris Pine does his voice.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't think the voice fit though.
You did?
Really?
How old is Jack Frost? But I know I saw. I think I read in the trivia on IMDb that Jack Frost is 18.
Yeah.
In this film, like, I mean, he's stuck as an immortal in this 18-year-old state. So, like,
not too shabby.
Yeah.
What, is Chris Pine in his 30s or something? I don't know. What do y'all think about him?
I thought it was just really funny how the fairies are completely enamored with him.
They're all swooning at the type.
I know, they're like Tooth Fairy is like fangirling over like how amazing his teeth are.
It's like, they're just as bright and shiny white as they say they are. Okay, girls, come on, get yourself together.
Nice.
I know, that's funny. And so his deal is he's mischievous because he causes the snow and the blizzards, but he also helps kids have fun, I guess, with his like frost vision.
Yeah, he's the guardian of fun.
He's the guardian of fun.
Santa is the guardian of awe.
Awe.
Easter Bunny is the guardian of hope.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And Sandman? Anyone?
It's the guardian of sand.
Okay.
Dreams. He's the guardian of dreams, isn't he?
Yeah, probably. Makes sense.
The guardian of your subconscious.
Anyways, it's just, I just think it's funny. It's like guardian of fun. I'm like, I'm sorry. Personally, ice and slipperiness and snow is not fun ever.
I was really scared for that kid when he sends him like sledding through the town on ice at like, it's like 60 miles per hour. You know, he could die at any second. My question is, folks, how many kids did Jack Frost kill before he got the sledding thing right?
Like, whoa.
We don't talk about that. That's in the unwritten tales.
That's in the unwritten tales. Maybe something about it in the books. But man, I mean, I guess he's been at it for a while, Jack Frost.
Yeah, he's pretty old.
300 years.
Jamie, you just made it snow in my room.
Jamie was cute. I like Jamie.
Yeah, he's a cute kid.
Because Jamie has hope. And Jamie's a believer. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But You know, I like that, speaking of Nightmare Before Christmas, I like that Jack's design, you know, he has this, like, these long spindly legs, and he's sort of, like Jack Skellington, but a bit more human, a bit more meat on his bones. It's funny.
Yeah, it's all about them skinny jeans, folks. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very tailored for today's world.
The hoodie,
people can relate. People can relate.
Well, I like that his whole outfits and everything changed with the times. I'm thinking, okay, where does he go for his clothing?
I don't know, the Guardian of Clothes probably makes it for
<I'm> like... The Guardian of Clothes.
So, his backstory is kind of interesting. It's like, okay, he's with his sister, and they're on the icy pond, and they're kind of skating, and he's like, would I trick you? And she's like, yes, you always play tricks. And then he falls into the icy water and drowns.
Maybe he died of shock.
Traumatizing much? That's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, the poor sister and his family, I mean, yeah. They don't talk about them, but that had to have been... I mean, I was expecting to see her, you know, when you see his view looking up into the broken ice hole, like seeing her peek over to see where he is, but nope, didn't really care.
Yeah, do they even fetch out his body or anything? No. They obviously didn't, because when he wakes up, you know, as an immortal,
Just I think he's just a spirit, though, isn't he?
But was that sometime later?
Spirit,
you know,
maybe.
Like, why didn't he get up and try to go to his house and see his family?
Yeah, he just goes to the town. He's like, hey, guys, hey, I'm back. I can fly.
Well, because he can't remember anything.
Oh, that's right. He can't remember anything.
Yes, yes.
There we go. That's how it works. Okay. So that's our Guardian lineup. Yeah, it's kind of weird. We've got two Guardians that are based off of holidays, two that are based off of imaginary, you know,
folklore.
You know, beings.
Folklore.
And then one that's also folklore. So, like... How come there's not like a Valentine's Day Guardian? You know, I thought that Guardian of Love. You know, Cupid having kind of like a Hawkeye kind of deal where he's very deadly with his bows and arrows. You know, the groundhog. What powers would the groundhog make have?
Just can see the future,
making winter longer. He's probably in cahoots with Jack.
Yeah,
tunneling skills. So, yeah, I'm just trying to speculate, like, what kind of other... This is the leprechaun, right? Because the Sandman alludes to the leprechaun.
Mm-hmm.
Leprechaun would be cool, you know? You can probably make it rain coins.
St. Patty's Day.
Yeah, leprechaun would be, like, the guardian of luck, you know?
Or beer in some circles.
There could be the guardian...
The guardian of beer!
There could be the guardian of gluttony, which is the turkey.
Guardian?
Yeah.
Oh, go.
Which that movie's coming out this year.
Turkeys!
Free birds!
Free birds, that's right.
Free birds. So what's the burrito place going to say about that?
Burrito place?
You guys don't know what Free Birds is?
No.
Oh my gosh. Well, come back down to Texas. Free Birds is a burrito and chicken wings, I think, franchise. Down here in Texas.
Burrito and chicken wings, huh?
It's Texas, okay? You got a problem with that?
It's almost like the Taco Bell Pizza Hut mixture thing. It's like,
yeah.
How? I don't understand. Whatever. Moving on.
Yeah. In the next Rise of the Guardians movie, they should have all the American presidents come out as, you know, for President's Day. The Guardians of Liberty. This makes me think of, I was watching Dexter's Lab, and you know Major Glory, who's like the knockoff of Captain America? He's like fighting someone who's like, you cannot defeat the speed of America, the might of America, the Constitution of America!
Nice.
Yeah, so we've got our Guardians, and then, of course, there's a bad guy, the mantagonist of this film, voiced by Jude Law, which totally fits, I mean.
Totally.
And that's Pitch Black. You know, he's not, there's not really anything that special about him, you know. He's kind of your Voldemort, you know, typical devil character, you know. Hades. It's pretty clear what he represents. Jude Law was a good choice for his voice. You know, very malevolent. Mm-hmm. You know, I bet, do you think he dated Maleficent?
Ooh.
Pitch?
Maybe. I'm sure there's fan art.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's fan art.
If not before, there will be now.
I like how his home is like this hole underneath an old rickety bed in the middle of a creepy forest.
Yeah, random.
Well, because the boogeyman lives under the bed. Like, I thought that was awesome. I was like, oh, creeper.
True.
Okay, speaking about boogeymans, Who do you like better as the boogeyman? Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas or Pitch Black?
Pitch?
I think Pitch.
They're both pretty evil. You know, one of them's a little more silly.
Yeah, goofy.
The other one.
Yeah, Pitch is definitely more just straight up mean.
Mm-hmm. Pitch, there's no, like, funniness about him. He's all serious. He's very
He's
vile.
All serious. He's very vile. Mm.
He's not a Rasputin, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh.
He's definitely more on... Is he, would you...
Dork of the night.
Would you call him more of a Jafar character? I mean, Jafar...
No. Well, he doesn't have a bird with him.
Oh, yeah, that's true. No, which was the one that we were talking about that was, like, all mean?
The dude from the Black Cauldron, like, he's right up there with
We haven't reviewed that yet.
The dude from the Black Cauldron is like, yep, rip out their spine. Yeah. This is a Disney film, kids. Yeah. Pitch. Know. He's pretty bad. Also, I like how no matter what character from any show you do a Google search on, you can always find some weird, slightly homoerotic fan art going on. You know, whatever. It's just not in the canon, folks.
Example.
You can express your creativity. I've got one up on the show docs. There's one of him like about to, he's like caressing Jack Frost. They're like, it's like that, you know, that anime look when they're like looking into each other's eyes about to kiss, you know? And it's
yeah.
Like, anyway, I mean, whatever, you know, whatever your style is, I don't mean to offend whoever drew that, but it's not part of the canon. Come on.
Not part of the canon. Okay, I like that, you know, their excuse at why Pitch came back and suddenly he's relevant. They're like, no one's been afraid of you since the Dark Ages. And I'm like, okay, I don't believe that statement for two reasons. Number one, the Dark Ages, and then they do this montage of, like, the Dark Ages being dark. Like, the Dark Ages were dark because of a lack of enlightenment and advancement, not because of a literal darkness.
Okay, girl from Magic School Bus.
It was just like, no, I'm not buying that. And number two... Okay, there were tons of people, especially kids, nowadays and long time ago, all the time, who are afraid of the dark.
Yeah, remember the Nickelodeon
show? This
will
always be a kid's thing, that they're afraid of the dark.
Yeah, so who took over for Pitch while that was going on?
I don't know, but I feel like he had a job this whole time. I don't know what he's complaining about.
Yeah.
I guess he just wants more power than what he has.
Because he is like, I want what you want. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I just like at the end where he's like, do you believe in the boogie? And he gets hit by the snowball. I chuckled.
Chortle. Laugh.
So let's go. I guffawed at that. So let's check out. So scenes and sequences of note. Did anyone see Max Payne? I thought the whole floating in the freezing water thing reminded me of the first part of that film. Except he wasn't floating down to his death. He was floating up to his life. You know, I heard one interviewer with Ramsey be like, you know, it's a kind of a serious tone film because it starts out with someone dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Ramsey was like, or a birth, not a death. So it's kind of weird, you know. You know, like the legend of the Phoenix. An end is the beginning. Anyway, just a side note, for the past like week and a half, I've been trying desperately and failing to get the new Daft Punk album out of my head. It's so catchy. But anyway, so yeah, I thought that was kind of weird.
You know, the very first scene, the scene where Jack is talking to the man in the moon, or Manny, as Santa says, I'm a religious person. And so a lot of things, I tend to look at things in that way a lot of times, especially like a lot of these to me had a lot of religious allusions. Like,
oh, definitely.
Like amazing, like through the entire thing. It was like, oh, well, obviously because most of these characters are based off of religious holidays anyway. So you're going to see that a lot. And I actually really liked it. I mean, for me, it's something that I can read into that. I mean, it doesn't make you read into that way, but because that's who I am, I end up going all down that road, like, a lot. So sure. I appreciated that, though.
Yeah, it's cool. It's interesting because I've read some user reviews and discussions on IMDb, you know, from non-believers, you know, religiously, who, you know, noted that this film is kind of, you know, kind of paganistic because it's all superstition. But you could also interpret it definitely as this kind of spiritual message. I saw it like the man in the moon. Okay, I get what you're really trying to say, you know, spiritually, and I think it's cool. You know, the whole concept of being called to do something. Or having the faith that you're called to do something on, you know, in your life or on Earth, but finding it out, and that's kind of a journey within itself. I definitely got that theme, and I thought I appreciated it a lot.
I think with this movie, because it wasn't so explicitly religious in a way, I think they purposely did that, because then, of course, they're going to offend everybody if they make a movie that's actually about a religion or something, and you can't do that nowadays, I guess. Right. But I think you kind of took from it, your own beliefs. So if you're religious, then you kind of saw those religious allusions, and they meant something to you. And if you weren't, then maybe you saw a bit more paganistic, or just, a good story about hope. And so I kind of like that, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't see it as political correctness. I just saw it as exploring these really cool themes that you can interpret them as spiritual, and it was uplifting to me as a religious or spiritual person.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, definitely. And sometimes for me, it helps even to not to so delineate it, this is what we mean, this is exactly, but I like the metaphorical view of it, because it helps me, I'll end up thinking more about it later on, and I'll end up draw my own conclusions here and there. So I actually kind of appreciate it in that way. I watched it with my dad last night, and he was kind of the opposite. He definitely saw it more of the paganistic type way. It's they don't, da da da. But I have the exact same beliefs as he does, but at the same time, I am able to get more from it because I look at it in the more metaphorical way.
Deep. Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, that's my that's my little pitch right there. Speaking of pitch, did you guys notice how the nightmares were all female horses?
I did. They're not mares. Until you just told me that.
Pitch is, he sends out all these horses as nightmares. Well, a mare is actually a female horse. So ladies of the night.
Okay, I don't know about that.
No,
take it a little far.
I like the night mare thing. That's pretty cool.
No, it was just that was really cool, though. I was the mares, they're horses that go run off and ruin
what
your...
What about the mayor?
The nightmare.
The nightmare. Dun, 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 dun. Anyway. No, that's cool. That's cool. He controls their chromosomes so that they don't breed out of control. It's like Jurassic Park.
Oh, they're all female. All right.
It's really that simple. So let's talk about Sandman. Adorable little guy. Why do they always break your hearts by making them the most adorable, awesome character get destroyed in the middle of the film?
Yeah.
What exactly happened to him?
I
thought
know.
He was going to convert into Nightmare Sandman,
Ooh, that would have been awesome.
Because his body was kind of turning all black and gooey,
Yeah.
But that's not who he is.
But he just kind of goes away.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. Eaten up by darkness?
He just kind of goes away, and I don't exactly remember how he got back. Did Pitch just weaken enough for Sandman to be brought back to life? Or did people start having good dreams again?
They might have believed him again. I don't remember.
So without Sandman, did people just not sleep anymore?
No, they slept, but they just
mass
had bad
insomnia.
Dreams.
It's like Japan.
That sucks. I've had insomnia before. It's not fun.
I have insomnia every time I drink
cane
sugar root beer before I go to bed.
So here's what happens. The children have faith in the final battle, I guess. And so they have faith that they're not going to, let the boogeyman take over. And they have faith that, the guardians are real and all these things. They have hope. And the faith, I guess, causes the Sandman to be resurrected.
Oh.
Which is another illusion I completely missed. Because I didn't see him as dying. I just assumed that he went somewhere else.
Huh.
But
generically defeated.
Exactly.
There you go. And so you kind of get into this weird conflict. Jack makes everyone mad for some reason. Jack's all emo because Sandman dies. And is generically defeated, I like when he's looking up at the moon. He's like, why did you send me here? Blah, blah, blah. It's all my fault. Blah, blah, blah. I wanted Mufasa to come out and be like, remember who you are. You are my son, the one and true king. And Jack's like, Mufasa, you got the wrong movie.
Oh, there's a Simpsons episode about that.
There
Lisa's talking to the Sax Man and he dies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's talking to him in, like, the clouds, and then Mufasa comes right up next to him. He's like, remember who you are, Lisa. And then it's a, from Star Wars?
Yeah, it's Darth Vader.
David Earl Jones.
I am your father, because it's the same guy who does the voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All three of those. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, no, get your own movie. Get your own cartoon. Like, we're sorry. They just disappear.
That's awesome.
Oh, Simpsons Marathon. It is happening.
That's a great one. Oh.
Now.
That is definitely the episode I'm going to be on. I'm sorry. If I can't participate in the Pokemon one to this extent, but Simpsons, you know it.
Yeah, you can cut me out of the Simpsons one just because I never watched it. It was like outlawed in my house.
Yeah.
King of the Hill, on the other hand.
Nice. All right.
Yes. Now, someone explain to me exactly how Jack ruined Easter, because he, like, goes off and he, like,
Jack.
So he, like, goes and follows the voice, and he gets all messed up with Pitch, gets all beat up, blah, blah,
because
blah.
Because he was supposed to guard everything. So he was supposed to be the one guarding, making sure that Pitch doesn't get in. But because he left, all of the nightmares were able to come in and destroy everything for Easter. Mm-hmm. And as we know, they're perishable, so can't really fix that.
Why didn't he explain to the other guardians? Like, I hate when animated films do this. You know, there's like a misunderstanding or like something happens and they're like, explain yourself, main character and protagonist. And they're like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean for things to end up this way. I think in a lot of instances, if they would just explain exactly what happened and be like, hey, look, guardians, it's misunderstanding. I thought I heard someone who needed help. And I went down to this weird hole in the ground, but it was actually a trap. So I'm very sorry for the misunderstanding, you know, whatever. But no, they're like, oh, how could you do this to us? You know, and he's like, oh, I'm so, you know, so sad. You know, everybody hates me. I'm getting out of here. Low point in the plot line.
Yeah, totally. Well, I thought that, I don't know, he gets down there and he could have gone back really quickly. You know, he was free and then he, you know, the fairies are there and he could have gone back. But then he's kind of taken over, you know, seeing his memories in the tooth, and he's like, oh, you know, and he finds it, and then he kind of delves into that. And so to me, that was one thing that he obviously didn't want to tell them. It's like, oh, I chose myself over all the children who I'm supposed to be in training to train to save.
Huh.
But so I think, to me, if he were to say what actually happened, the full story, then it'd be like, oh, you're selfish. But the first part of that, I totally agree. Like, it wasn't his fault. He just got tricked.
Oh, well.
He's the king of tricks. He got out-tricked.
Dang.
Wah.
Yeah. I never thought I'd see the day when a guardian would choose himself before his children. Bug's life.
Good one.
The point is, Jack, you lied to us. Anyway. And then things just start going south. Literally, I think Jack ends up in, like, Antarctica. With baby tooth.
it's like a total Aladdin remake right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He has Abu in his vest. Yeah. He's like, I'm sorry.
I've got to make this right.
Okay, when baby tooth sneezes in Jack's hand, it's like so freaking adorable.
You can't watch that now without thinking of Aladdin.
Nice. So I love when Jamie's talking to the stuffed Easter bunny and he's like, if you're real, you're going to have to prove it. Like, right now. And I'm like, that's risky business, asking for a sign.
Well, no, right? Seek for signs.
But, you know, it's like, did Jamie really believe that talking to the stuffed bunny was going to make anything happen? Because he already saw what the real Easter bunny looked like.
I didn't get it. Yeah, I didn't get it. Was that, like, his port key to talking to the Easter bunny? Because he saw him in real life. Because he's talking to his fellow kids about, like, how cool the Easter bunny is.
Hold on. Something's wrong with your mic.
Yours sounds weird too.
It does? Oh, it must be the internet.
You know, if Pitch just wanted to snuff out all the lights on Earth, why didn't he just go to the globe and just start stamping them out like he was doing? You know, and he's like, 6, 5, 4, and I was like, who are you? The inverse count on street. One child.
Just now that we're on that, did you ever realize that the count is a count and he counts?
Yes.
That, like, took me till I was, like, 19 to realize that.
Gosh, Chelsea.
I was like, oh, wow, I never knew that. Wow. That's me.
Brother.
Okay, go back.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about the final battle. We kind of talked about what's going on.
The final battle.
I love that it's, like, kid's power. Anything is possible if you just believe. All it takes is faith and trust. And something I forgot. Dust! If anyone knows the two Disney references I just quoted right there, you are awesome.
You are awesome. You get an A for the day.
Okay, it was Pinocchio and Peter Pan, but...
So anyway, and so I guess I'm trying to get the whole symbolism here, how they defeat Pitch, you know, like it's kind of like knowing that evil and, you know, the forces of evil exist, but not being afraid of them. Was that the point?
Yeah, basically it's just not having fear when you know that you have the power to be better. It's like, if you have faith, you'll always be able to overcome even the darkest of dark, which is a true statement. Like, you know, Satan or the devil or Pitch or Hades, whoever, it's like, they'll have control over you if you give them control.
Right.
This was kind of like taking that control back and giving the kids the power. Kid power.
Woohoo.
Kid power. Well, kids are the embodiment of, you know, of love, of innocence, hope. I'm surprised I didn't go into the adult world and all, you know, all the pessimism and cynicism and that are associated with adults. But that'd be like 290s, you know. But anyway. Hey, good job. So the Sandman comes back, whoops up on Pitch. Freaking awesome.
Well, bam.
Well, bam. And then we get to see all these cool giant sand dinosaurs and like and stuff. All the nightmares turn back
awesome.
To unicorns.
Yeah.
And the kids actually defeat the nightmares and turn them into unicorns.
Yay!
Which I'm total lover of unicorns right now, FYI, thanks to the old ponies. I have a unicorn shirt. And so we just bought this thing over. It's like this big, it's like a white stag that it's a decoration, I guess. But
yeah, I totally
wanted to buy the unicorn version, but Jared said no. I thought it was
your Patronus.
Yeah, my Patronus, you're right.
Your Instagram thing was awesome.
Oh, thank you.
My Patronus is Godzilla, therefore I win.
Okay, I'll find there.
Just wanted to put that out there.
I've got a soft mountain lion at the ranch. I can throw that in there.
Oh, sounds cool.
I love one of the most off-character quotes from Pitch is where they're all celebrating at the end. He's like, how dare you have fun in my presence?
I know, I was seriously like, nerd.
What a loser. How dare you have fun? Like,
okay.
What is he, Plankton from SpongeBob? How dare you? But anyway, I just think it's funny. And it's kind of cool, the nightmares show up again. And I was watching that, I was like, okay, there's going to be another fight scene? And then Santa's like, I'm not afraid. Those aren't my nightmares.
Nice.
And it's like, dun, dun, dun. Even Pitch can fear things.
That was cool.
But yeah, that
well,
was cool.
Pitch be like the ultimate beholder of fear? Like, don't you think he should be fearful of like everything because he is the essence of fear?
Well,
or it's because
I think
he's the
guardian and giver and deliverer of fear.
So that makes him
immune?
He's like Aku from Samurai Jack, you know, shape-shifting master of darkness. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think his character would be as forceful or as strong if he was afraid all the time.
Yeah,
he'd kind of
like
come off as like a Peter Pettigrew or something.
Nice.
Come on, I was your rat.
We had so many good years together.
Now, the last line in the film by Jack is very Spider-Man, don't you think? You know, he's like, I'm Jack Frost, and I'm a guardian. And he's like, how do I know that? Because the moon told me so. And when the moon tells you something, believe it. A lot of reviewers were like, I don't get it. No one talks to the moon.
That's what I said.
But you got to remember all the spiritual metaphors here.
Yeah,
I know. But the way he said it, he made it seem like it's very literal. Like when the moon talks to you, you got to talk back. Got to believe.
It's not you got to talk back.
I don't know. I just it was
when the moon tells you something, answer.
Yeah, so I guess you see the movie on a bit higher level than I did because I was just like,
okay, not higher. Come on.
Oh, come on.
Just better. Well, you know, anyone who's had that experience in their life where they feel like they've been called to do something in their life, you know, when you know, you know, you know.
Oh, I totally know.
You got to believe.
I am the guardian of Legos. That's my calling.
So at the very end, they had this really weird end credit music. It was very like operatic. And
yeah, that was weird.
It didn't fit. But when I read later, it was a song written for William Joyce's daughter, kind of like in honor
of
her.
Oh, that's good.
And so I'm like, oh, I can't really make fun of it now. But it just didn't fit, really. I mean, I understand writing a song and having it in her honor, but it just seemed just they could have done it in a different style. But I don't know. It was it was really weird because nothing of the movie was like that. It was sort of like the old 90s R&B.
Oh, brother. Ah, the old opera remix at the end.
That's going to be a thing now. It's going to be so 2000s, 2010s.
I know the next Toy Story movie comes out at the end. It's going to be, you've got a friend in me.
Well, also in The Adventures of Tintin, I mean, you've got the operatic singer in there. And so you had a lot of opera. And I'm thinking there's a lot of that going on lately.
Opera, more like slopera.
Hey, I can appreciate good opera. I mean, there's definitely some that's like, there doesn't really feel very much heart in that. But, like, there's some really ones that I'm like, I've had a tear shed a time or two. You know.
So let's talk about, you know, after seeing the film, what we liked about it and what we didn't like it before, you know, we rate it. These will be, like, our final thoughts, pros and cons. You know what I liked about this film?
Tell me.
Yetis. Enough said.
That's all you need, right
there. I just like the one Yeti who makes all the toys blue, and he's like, no, we need more red. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
And then when he's making the eggs, he's like, no, it's too Christmassy. We need more blue. It's like, oh.
You know what's interesting about the Yeti? So I own the book, The Art of DreamWorks, Rise of the Guardians. So we did a YouTube review of that. So you can go to our YouTube channel, therotoscopers.com/YouTube, and you can read our review. And you can also go to Amazon to buy it. A lot of people have actually bought this because of our review. But as I was watching the movie, I was looking through this art of book, and it shows the concept art and stuff. And actually, the design of the Yetis is very similar to William Joyce's original designs that are in the books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome.
They were, like, very Wookiee-ish.
Yeah, with these, like, funny mustaches. Now, the reindeer are definitely different, and Santa has a monocle, FYI.
Oh, my.
Yeah, no tats. So, yeah, it's definitely cool, because this is probably one of the best art books, and because you really get to see all iterations of the characters from start to finish, and even,
That's good. I love seeing the old rejected designs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even they have a cool page on here. They, like, even go above and beyond. They even have 2 full pages of the artwork that's in the kids' bedrooms, which I thought was cool.
Oh, really?
A lot of work gets spent on those things, and you don't even notice them, you know? And so this really puts in the forefront. Anyways, Yeti tangent over.
Yeah, Yetis. Now, I love the themes of this film, because, you know, as we discussed, you know, it's got these kind of spiritual themes and kind of themes about, like, hope and faith and fear and doing that, and I just thought it was cool because it had kind of these multiple lines of journeys that the film took. So I thought the plot was complex enough. It was cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I liked about this film. And then the really cool design of it all.
So what I liked about this movie is I really liked that it took you into this world beyond the world that we know. We know the Easter Bunny, you know, to an extent. We know Santa Claus. And it gives you this other side of it. And I love that when they create this whole new universe and fandom and canon behind these guys. And so it was really cool to see that, like, what happened if they were friends, which we discover Easter Bunny and Santa aren't really friends, but they do know each other, and then they are aligned on a similar purpose. And I thought it was really neat.
Yeah. I went into this originally, like, the very first time I ever saw it, I went into this not really knowing what I would get. And then as I watched it, they did a really good job at just drawing you into the action. And I found myself even believing just the new mythos that they're putting forth, you know, to back up what we already know about certain ones. And the animation is just really crisp and clean, just very, very good. Like I mentioned earlier, I like the fact that you're able to take it in and have more of a metaphor with it as well. I really, really enjoyed it. So those are some of the things that I liked.
So what didn't we like about the movie? I guess on a negative note.
So what didn't we like? You know, the only real complaint I have about this film is the pacing. It seemed very rushed to me, partly because you have all these different kind of plot lines going on, and then there's a lot of explanation that needs to be done. Like the whole children believing in you, and when they don't, you know, you start to fade away and all that stuff, you know, the oaths.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they did that instead of, you know, Santa Claus showing up at the beginning and be like, hello, my name is Santa Claus. I am Russian. Every year I give toys, but I'm actually a, you know, bare knuckles boxer guy. and blah, blah, blah. This guy is named Pitch. He is the bad guy. You know, I'm glad they didn't, like, explain all that stuff, so that's good.
Yeah.
But I mean, the pacing just seemed very rushed. It was very breakneck speed, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Pitch, he destroyed the faith of every child on Earth once in, like, 2 days.
That's why you don't underestimate him.
Yeah.
I guess so.
So, yeah. I guess the thing that bothered me that I didn't really like, two things. So, the animation, like I talked about, just, I liked the designs a lot. I thought they were cool, they were unique, they were different, they were edgy, but the animation of the hair just really got to me. I felt like by 2012, the hair could have been a little better. I don't know if that was on purpose. And then another thing I didn't like about this movie is how poorly it did in the box office. I think it was really good. It has sort of a cult following now. I mean, it is popular by those people who gave it a chance. I'm not saying that DreamWorks didn't give it a chance. I mean, they tried something, you know, because they had to, you know, be edgy and they wanted to see if it would work, and it failed. And it was pretty unfortunate for that, you know, especially since, you know, we did an interview with Frankie Franco and he worked on this, and it was really a bummer that, you know, he was a production assistant and he spent a lot of time on this, that it just didn't do as well as, you know, he and the rest of the team would have wanted and hoped for. And that's sad, because for every animated movie, whether, you know, we like it or not, whether it's good or not, like, I do think about the team who spent a lot of time working on that, and I really do feel bad for them when it doesn't
really do.
I mean, but $303 million, not too shabby, but when 300 people also get fired from DreamWorks, not cool, man. Not cool.
Hey, not cool.
All right. Yeah, I really wasn't that much that I didn't like about it. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm giving it a very high score. My score is 4.5 stars.
Ooh, nice.
Like, I really liked it.
What about you, Mason?
I give it 3.5. Oh. Yeah, 3.5. I mean, I did like the film. It just wasn't, like, amazing to me, you know?
Yeah. So I give mine right smack dab in the middle of you two.
You always do that.
No, I do not.
No, she doesn't.
No, but really, when I thought about this ahead of time, I'm like, that's 4 stars for me. I mean, it's good, but it's not a 5-star grade. It's not even 4.5 grade, but it's not 3.5 for me. So yeah, 4 stars. That's pretty decent. I mean, all of ours, it's in the good territory, right?
No, that's
yeah. This
that's
wasn't
great.
A bad film.
Okay, so we asked for your thoughts on Rise of the Guardians. So here are the responses that we got via voicemail.
Hey guys, my name is Teresa and I'm sending you a big hello from the Czech Republic. First of all, I want to thank you for your podcast. It always makes my day and you're amazing. So, Rise of the Guardians. It's my second most favorite DreamWorks film right after How to Train Your Dragon. The idea of these mystical creatures knowing each other is just fantastic. I love the characters, their backstories, the way they look. Especially with Santa and two fairies and Sandy with his magical scent. All the voice actors have done a great job, although I think that Chris Pine's voice is maybe too manly for Jack. But it's okay because there is Alec Baldwin with his Russian accent. The plot is nothing special, but it's great that character interaction is in the focus. I also love these little details, you know, like nightmares and all the stuff. This is a good fairy tale story with likable characters. I believe that I'm not the only one who calls this movie the Avenger for kids. That's all from me, and I have a question for you guys. Have you heard about something called a Big Four? It's a fanfiction crossover between Rise of the Guardian, The Brave, Tangled, and How to Train Your Dragon. So what do you think about this, and what's your opinion to these fanfiction crossovers in general? Thank you for answer and keep on good work. Bye.
Aw, she's so cute.
Thank you for your awesome voicemail.
Okay, so it's Rise of the Guardians, Brave, Tangled, and How to Train Your Dragon.
It's just crossover. Okay, comment.
I don't know. I suppose I'd have to read it first.
Yeah, I've never heard of them. I've never been able to read them, so I don't know. I've gone into some fan fiction on some different things before, and a lot of times, you know, there's a lot you've experimented with it. Sometimes here and there, not a lot, but it's been quite a few years. But you know, it's really amazing. There's so many really great writers out there. My only thing is, you know, it's good to have, as you know, looking at the writers, it's good to see you going out and doing something, but and experimenting in these different worlds. But, you know, you would get so much more if you made up your own worlds and you know, tried to publish it. So, because there's so many really good, authors out there that like write in these, but it's kind of just a shame that they can't ever get anything out of it.
Well,
after.
A lot do. I mean, that's how 50 Shades of Grey
did.
Oh, really?
It used to be, it was a Twilight fan fiction, and it got super popular. She just changed all the names.
Now they've got a move.
Yeah, and there's actually a lot of fan fiction writers that go off and then they self-publish on Amazon and their followers all go with them and they buy, or, you know, fan fiction writers get, like, publishing deals. So, I mean, I think it's a way to start using to kind of fine-tune your writing ability with characters that are already established before you start creating your own. And it's just sort of fun. There's no, you know, no stakes, I guess.
That's true.
So I haven't read it, but I'll have to check it out. I do like, I kind of like crossover pictures and like, you know, when they enter each other's worlds and become part of each other's worlds, which is really cool. But yeah, that's awesome. And I also like that comment at how Rise of the Guardians are considered the Avengers for kids.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Kind
Avengers
of true.
Avengers for kids. Yeah, that's right. I've heard that a couple times. Yeah.
Okay, so that was a really good episode, guys.
This was a good film, yeah.
I was excited because it's been a while since we've been together, and I was really excited watching this, and I was excited to, you know, talk about everything with you guys, and two DreamWorks films in a row, not too shabby.
That is true.
Are we going to make this a habit?
I don't know.
No, we're going to do the other one next time, right?
Well, we're still going to do the Cartoon Network one, but maybe towards the end of summer when we have more chance to kind of all catch up on different series instead of one person doing one series. So if you're excited for that, don't worry. It's coming in the future. Our next one is going to be Robin Hood, and I am beyond excited for that.
Oodalali.
Oodalali. Golly, what a day.
And speaking of the website, so, you know, when the week before this episode was released on the website, we had a lot of our writers, they went together and they did Rise of the Guardians themed pieces. So some are like really funny and short. Some are going to be like our opinion articles that are a bit more heavier. They explore some of the themes that, you know, we talk about here. And it's going to be really cool. So that's something we're going to start doing for all of our new episodes the week prior to the release, and the new release date is going to be on Friday, everyone. So attention, Friday. So if you were kind of waiting for Monday, Tuesday, it's now going to be Friday. And the week before, we're just going to have a big, like, excitement to get everyone pumped up for that movie, and we can kind of watch it together and then comment on the different articles. So I'm really excited for all these opinion pieces and articles that it's going to happen for Robin Hood, because that one is instant classic. Should be a platinum edition, but Disney doesn't think so.
No, they did a Blu-ray at least.
Yeah. It's coming out. The Blu-ray's coming out like in October, and they're basically like rehashing the same cover art. It's like,
Oh, brother.
So
that was actually one of the very first DVDs I ever purchased, Robin Hood.
Nice.
That and Goofy Movie. So it has a very soft spot in my heart.
Very good.
So yeah, that's exciting things happening. And so stay tuned on our website, therotoscopers.com, so you can find out those, you know, pump up week before the podcast. And so we're going to be doing Robin Hood, Pokemon movie coming in the future. We're going to be doing that with one of our writers, Gary Wright, which is going to be awesome. That's just going to be a me and Mason episode because Chelsea doesn't really have much to add for the Pokemon, which is cool.
Hey, it's just not what I got into.
So she has a bye that week.
Yeah, we will be doing a Simpsons episode at some point as well.
Yeah, that'll be
that cool. One will be amazing. And keep your recommendations coming, because we love new ideas.
And we have a list. Trust me. We get so many that it's like, we can't even do this many in 2 years. But we do have a list.
But they're all there.
We keep track of the ones that have been most requested. And Rise of the Guardians, I think in one of our episodes a few weeks ago, we mentioned like, if we get enough requests, we'll do it. And then like all of a sudden there were tons of requests. We're like, oh, okay. So cool. Thanks, guys. This was fun.
Make sure to check us all out at our individual locations. You can find Morgan Stradling on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter, Chelsea Robson. You can also find me at chelsearobson.com, which will take you to my Facebook page. You can also find Mason's blog at thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com.
You know, I really need to get a Twitter. I think this week I'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twitter. That is, guys, did you just hear this, fans? Mason
this
will have Twitter.
This is a big deal. It took him a year and a half.
You're going to get like 500 fans right away. I don't even have that.
Really?
It's going to be awesome.
All right.
He's like, okay, I'll go.
Also, don't forget, you can support the show by doing a trial of Audible, which is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. We talk about Audible all the time because we love Audible and we legitimately use Audible. So go to therotoscopers.com/audible and you can get your free 1 month trial and a free book that you get to keep forever, which is awesome. You can also support us whenever you shop at Amazon, which I know all of you do. You can go to our affiliate link and just click through that link whenever you make your purchases, and we get a little throwback at therotoscopers.com/Amazon. We really love it. That helps keep everything, you know, our little motors going. And then, of course, you can make a donation through PayPal if that, you know, wets your whistle. therotoscopers.com/donate and all those things. And hey, if you don't money, you just want to leave us a review on iTunes, that's even better. Go to just iTunes and leave us a review. Whatever you think. 1 star, 5 star, 4 stars, 3 stars. No stars.
Yeah, not 1 star. Come on.
Oh, well, okay. I didn't say 1 star. Come on. Come on. But yeah, it really helps us, and we love when you leave reviews. Right now, I think we're almost at 50, so it'd be awesome if we can get 50 reviews in the next few times.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Until next time, we are the Rotoscopers.
All right, everybody neat and pretty, then on with the show.
Let's go.
I'll do it.
Do you know what that's from?
No.
Mickey Mouse Club.
Nice. Sounded a bit Disney-ish.
Would you ever consider reviewing direct-to-video sequels?
Oh, yeah. We already do. On YouTube.
On YouTube.
I'm like, I'm not doing more than that. I love how she said, Rise of the Guardians.
Rise of the Guardians. Where's she from again?
Czech Republic.
Wow.
Like, we get around, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, sweet. Spanish country, El Origen de los Guardianes. Brazil, El Origen dos Guardiotes. Belgium, Le Sig Legendes. Croatia, Pet Legendi. Norway, De Femme Legende, Legendini. Germany, Die Hutter des Lichte. Because you hate Gatsby for being so naive, you know, for being so short-sighted, and then you hate Daisy because she's like, oh, I don't know what I want. I mean, come on, lady, let's be honest. But, and then Tom, you know, Tommy's like, oh, I say Gatsby's no good, yeah. And then Nick's just like, one more party, please. What, I have a job? I don't really do it? What? Jay-Z? What?
Oh, my gosh.
What is that from?
It's from Robin Hood.
It's from the most, most hilarious Disney film ever made.
Who does that dopey Duke think he is?
Cheek. What cheek?
Oh, we need to do that one next. That one.
Yeah. Okay. Come on. Can we do Robin Hood next? Okay. Oh my goodness. I'd be so happy.
Okay, done. Done and done and done.
I can sing all the songs.
Oh, so can I.
Ooh, and we can plug in that Mumford & Sons cover of Nottingham.
They do a cover of that?
Yeah, I have it.
Oh, please. Awesome. Anything that's melancholy and a slightly bluegrass sound.
Mumford & Sons got it.
Mumford & Sons have got it.
Have their ups and downs.
Yeah, you can get like, you can hear like the chains clinking in rhythm to the song. Now the Nottingham. I'm inclined to believe.
if we weren't so down,
we'd up and leave.
Up and cry. No, we'd up and fly if we had wings for flying. I don't know, the tears were crying.
Like a tumbleweed sound, like a rattle.
Oh, such a good movie. I'm excited now.
Next time on The Rotoscopers.